Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's always soccer in Philadelphia on a Thursday, even after a shitty Philadelphia Union loss. We were considering just taking that tape and burning it and never, talking about that game again. But we feel obligated to do that, and we feel obligated to do that with a first-time guest of the program, even though you've heard the pair, he and I, talk before on Fox Sports The Gambler on the post-game show. Everybody, welcome in John Jansen to the program.
Yeah, good to be invited on a soccer podcast. Never thought in my days I'd be invited onto one of these, but it's good too. And we've been getting a lot of good feedback on that. So anyone who's listening to this, that's listened to the post-game show, that's tweeted at us, it's awesome. I love doing post-game show stuff and love doing it for the Union. So it's been good to hear all the feedback.
Yeah, we got a lot of good feedback about that last year. That was nice, because, it was the first year, the second year. What year are we in now? Is this year two?
I think year two. Yeah.
So, no, it was cool I know. Everything's just a blur for me these days. But it was nice to get the feedback on that. So we appreciate, or we enjoy doing it, as long as you guys appreciate us doing it for you, So, not much to talk about on last night's post-game show, because they threw up a stinker in Chicago. And I guess I probably jinxed it when I pointed out that the Union had amazing odds there, that you have to put that money.
Joe Tanzi called it the most disrespectful line of the season. That's when we knew the Union were going to lose.
This is MLS odds in a nutshell here, because there's so much parity in the league that it does seem inconceivable that the number one team in the conference goes and plays the last place team in the conference plus 190 something to win. I think you get a draw no bet for plus 115. I think you got a double chance for minus 155.
Yeah, in terms of betting, it reminds me, actually, it's more situations than it is teams and how good they are.
Yeah.
Because in the NBA, if a team's on a back-to-back and traveling on the second leg of that back-to-back, the book's obviously going to reduce that price a little bit. If it's a really good team going on the road, maybe taking on a bad one, they'll reduce that price because the situation tells you, yeah, they're, the odds are they lose this game or it's a close game. So they'll adjust the lines accordingly. It feels like that in the MLS, that situation kind of means everything. The Union, with that Sunday game going into a midweek one, already thin roster to begin with because of the U-20s. So it felt like more situational than it did anything else.
Vegas playing the letdown angle, and also looking at the fact that they, even before they had won against New York the other day, they had however many straight draws, So I think it probably made sense on their end. But, if you can get there's a 66% chance that a team is going to draw or win a game, right? And if you can get that double chance at minus 155, you play those odds for comparison here, for people who don't know what the hell we're talking about, you can, if Liverpool is favored over pick a team like Watford or something like that, a double chance for Liverpool would come out to minus 700 or something.
Yeah.
So it shows how much parity there is in MLS. And even though I probably would not even recommend anybody gambling on MLS ever, at least wins and losses and stuff like that. Now for the Union, the under 2.5 is going to hit probably most of the time, but you can make a lot of your money back really quickly just because you hit on some of these crazy plus odds. It's holy shit, So there's just a ton of value out there. It's just crazy because there's just randomness happening.
Yeah, it's something I haven't looked into yet, because obviously baseball, I treat it as a stock market, and sort of betting is like that to begin with. But baseball in general, it's more of are you getting a buy low price on a team? Maybe they lost four or five and the price is down, but they're in a good spot, I don't know if it's like that with MLS, because look, the situation could have called for, Chicago winning, but at that price, would you have bet it? Because the books are already telling you, we think that's already going to happen. So yeah, I haven't looked too much into MLS betting, but that was certainly one of the cases of, this is why maybe some people don't do it, because that was a good spot to bet Chicago. Just the price didn't suggest it.
I just thought it was a classic letdown game. Yeah. They didn't rotate any of the squad. They're lacking depth with the kids being away and, you know, emotional kind of whatever with Paulie rushing, you know, coming off that thing. And so, you know, you go to Soldier Field, you play in front of like 100 people, and like, how do you get up for that? You know, they just looked off the entire time. They had some moments in the second half there before the red card, but I don't know. To me, it was just a throwaway game. Did you see anything different?
No, you know, it's their second loss of the season. So I don't want to
say. I know. And by the way, just real quick, it's insane that we're sitting here. What is it? What is today? 6/30/22, and we're talking about the Union's second loss of the season on June 30th. Like, let's have some perspective here.
Yeah, and the thing is that their losses like this, or their games like this, are going to look a lot different than others. Because I think if you're an NYC fan and you look at what happened against Cincinnati yesterday, you're like, well, we scored 4 goals, came back 3-0, but that's NYC. You know, that's they're more capable of doing that. The Union, when they lose games, it's still going to be low scoring. It's still going to be gross. It's just that when it's gross and you lose, obviously it looks much worse. So look, this is the Union. It's going to be low scoring games. You know, sometimes teams are, and they deserve to win that one. Chicago was the better team overall in that game. But it's going to look gross either way, win or loss. It's just, the thing is, once you get into the playoffs, I love when the Union look like that, because it seems to work so well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But as of right now, like a June 29 game, a loss against Chicago and it looking that way, you know, it's nothing surprising, but it's also nothing, I think, too much to worry about.
No, I think, you know, there's two kind of takeaways that I came from this game. Number one was what you and I talked about with Joe on Sunday, where, you know, if you wanted to go Negadelphi with the New York win, you could say to yourself, hey, like the goals that they scored were not much of anything. You know, you got your deflection at the end there. And then you got, you know, the Ua goal where he's kind of bumping into the defender at the same time. Sean Johnson is doing God knows what, you know. And then you go back to the game before that. They got the really nice left footer, I think, from Ali Bedoya, which was a nice goal for sure. But then you go back to the game before that, before the break. And it was the bullshit or goal where Omar Gonzalez cleared the ball, hooked the ball right across his own box, and it was just the right place, right time. So three out of the last 4 goals that they've scored are just kind of like, you know, like nothing to really inspire you to think that like the offense has found it.
Yeah, there was only one. It was the Portland game, really, that they probably had better opportunities and good goals in that game more than others. It felt like actual quality chances that they had and went in instead of luck.
Yeah.
But that's really the only one. Other than that, you know, but that's typical Union, though. We saw that last year. I mean, I think they were able to win a bunch of playoff games with that. Obviously, they had that rocket from Glesnes.
Yeah.
They've been getting, but you know, it's ugly goals, but they're completely fine with that because they're likely going to hold a team to one goal or less.
It's a pretty good point, man. Yeah. I mean, the Union aren't exactly sexy when they are winning. You know, it's gross when they win, and it's even more gross when they lose. But, you know, that is effective, you know, playoff style, you know, what other cliche can I use? Blue collar, hard hat.
Yeah, blue.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, like that's what it's built for. I mean, like you need that stuff in the postseason. That benefited them last year. I mean, they were down 11 dudes and almost won anyway. So that was my one takeaway. It was just like, you know, the goals over the last couple of games, there's nothing that I see that's like, oh, they've figured it out, you know. And the other takeaway was, you know, Jose Martinez gets the red card. He throws, I think he threw another bird at a fan and did the Randy.
I think he did the Randy Moss thing.
Pulling the pants down, but not all the way, Moon. So that was interesting. You know, the other night he did the Philly urologist double bird, and then in this one he did a single bird and the Randy Moss. So Jose Martinez is having himself quite a week.
I know. But, well, within that too, had a spectacular game, maybe his best of the season, and then comes back with one of his worst too.
Yeah.
It's been a wild few days, I would say, for Martinez.
No, I think, you know, the weird thing, like I'm trying to like quote unquote advance the story with that, as we say in the journalism business. Like, I think we all know that he's an international quality guy and he'll make the jump to Europe or somewhere bigger at some point. I think those are the things that hold him back. You know, it's the disciplinary stuff. It's keeping your head. It's knowing that you play in a crucial position where you just can't afford to take that first card to begin with. If you're, you know, Daniel Gajdak and you get up on a guy's heels and you clip him or something like that, it's fine. You can play the rest of the game as a number 10 without going into any kind of tackle or any kind of like yellow card type of challenge. But Jose put himself behind the eight ball with that first one there. And the second one was ridiculous because Kasper Schmelke, all respect in the world to him for everything that he did, for this team for many years. He's slower than a Galapagos tortoise, you know? So you get beat by him at the 50-yard line, and they, instinctually you have pride. You don't want to get beat, so you grab the guy's jersey. And then you're like, oh, shit, I'm on a yellow. I forgot. But he had coverage back there anyway. Glessis was standing back there, and then he gets sent off. And it's like,
yeah, why don't you trust your coverage that's usually very good to begin with? So,
yeah,
it's just situational. It's sometimes like it doesn't seem like he understands the situation, especially when it comes to that. Like on that first yellow and at risk for the second one, you know, situationally kind of understanding those. But
I look,
Martinez is still obviously a great player. So those margins, you're right. They I would think they mean a little bit more when you go over maybe up a league internationally. But right now in the MLS, like he is one of the best at his position, and Union are much better for it. But, you know, I think going back to the goal scoring thing too, you know, I think that the disappointing thing is that it seemed like they worked on getting better at it. Like, we thought that there was going to be that next step. And it almost seemed like it was happening with Carranza and Gostek, because I thought they were creating chances that I don't remember seeing from the Union last year. And probably not since, like, Brendan Aaronson, but that even came on late. Like, Aaronson wasn't Aaronson with the Union. You know, that kind of came on really late, and we didn't get to see much of that. They were creating a lot of chances that you go, whoa, like the eye-opening, wow, that was great. You know, it was a playmaking ability. It was, you know, creating an open shot, you know, creating something that forces the defense into a penalty, anything like that. But that's just not been happening. And we thought that that was maybe turning the corner, and Ua was going to be part of that, and Gostek was going to be part of that, and Carranza. And that's just, it's disappointing because that's just not been happening lately. And we thought it's the same Union, so it's fine because we've seen they've been able to win like that before. But we thought at least there were going to be some changes with that, or at least look somewhat improved this season.
It's got to be tough to play as the number 10 in this system too, because you barely touch the ball, you know? And it's like, you know, then you got to make your chances when you do get the ball. You got to make them worthwhile.
It only seems like, for Gostek, it seems like he gets a few touches each game in a spot where he can make something happen with
it. Yeah, and then
usually he makes the right read, but the thing is he the other guy on the same page? Or are they making the right move? It's just, there's got to be a lot to happen at once.
And then you compound the frustration, because when you fuck up a pass or something like that, it's like, oh, I don't know when my next one is going to come. Maybe 5 minutes before I get another opportunity around the edge of the box, you know? So it's got to be frustrating for them to play that way, you know? But at the same time, he looked like impatient last night. The final passes,
that's been growing, it feels like.
Yeah, and like Ua hasn't done anything. Like, he had that run where the CB Chicos, or however the hell you say his last name, kind of was played actually very well, just kind of shepherded him out, played a strong foot, pushed him out to the side, and then he had the weird back heel coming in the other way. But it's like, you know, Carranza, then he wasn't really able to do anything in the hold-up game, or like, yeah, I think he had like one shot that he got off. But yeah, I mean, like, the front three is still, I know it's not a great system to be a striker in or be a number 10 in, but like, your opportunities, you're going to have to do something with them, even if you don't have as many of them as other guys do, you know? So it's a life you're living.
Yeah, and it does feel like, because every time, you know, either halftime or post-game or whatever it is, and mostly during halftime, there's always a quick interview with Jim Curtin, and it feels like every single time he says the same thing. You know, we got to clean things up, but also we have to give Gostek more touches. But like, I don't, like you just said, I don't know how that happens. You know, I don't know what needs to change for that to happen, or if they really can change anything, you know, big schematically to make that happen. But there seems to be an effort to get him more touches each game, because he really can do something special with it. He's got a nice creative bag of tricks that I think the Union, no other player has on the Union. So that's something that they need to use. But just how do you, again, do that on limited touches?
About 12 minutes in here, and quite frankly, we've spent more time on the Chicago game than it deserves. But that shows well on us that we're able to do that much on it to begin with, you know?
I could go 3 hours on it. You know me. I can, I'm a typical radio host. I can peel the onion, even though there are probably only two or three layers to it, really.
There was one post-game show, I think, this year where it was like a nil-nil or something, and you and I just pulled like 30 minutes out of our ass, out of nothing. I was like, wow, that was actually very impressive, you know? So I don't even know what I was talking about, but it was good.
I've gotten really good at bullshitting.
Yeah, there's an art form to it for sure. The NYC game, I mean, I could do like 10 hours of the NYC game, and I was like getting kind of heated on the post game show. Yeah, let's actually work. Like, well, let's just like go chronological order from like the final 15 minutes of the game to the end. So the Paul rushing thing is the first big thing, which is hilarious. So actually, since, you know, we did the post game show, he got the second game suspension and he got the fine or whatever. And it was like, oh, aggressive behavior, blah, blah, blah. MLS always like uses this like soft ass language. Like, oh, he was, you know, violent behavior. So he trying to give him like a love tap, you know, like, come on. Like, I've seen worse in the Casa League, you know, that
just say a shove or something. Why can't they?
Yeah, shove him or whatever. Yeah. So here's my thing. When we were talking about this the other day, like, we were talking, you and I were talking about how a lot of people deserve blame for that whole stupid thing getting out of control. Number one, if there's a player down, like the ref's got to kind of cordon off that area, just say, yo, call on the trainer, everybody back the fuck up, let the trainer do his thing. And just don't touch the dude when he's on the ground. You know what I mean? Like the trainer's standing there. So Acevedo goes over, he grabs him on the shirt and does like the get up, you're fine thing. Paulie pushes him off, which I thought was fine. No issue. But then he gets up. And I can't read lips, especially like in Spanish or whatever. Right. So it's like, but when he got up and he pushed him the second time, that's what I think kind of set off the whole whatever. And I'm not saying he was justified or wasn't justified, but like when he did the first push, whatever, nothing happened. He did the second push. That's when Castellanos came over.
That's the one I thought he instigated the most. Yeah. I think Castellanos is a snake, by the way. I do not like that guy. When
he only comes over and says something to somebody or puts his hands on somebody if they're already like engaged.
Yes.
He's with somebody else. Yes.
Yeah. He's the, and I love Gostek. It's still my favorite thing of the year. Gostek telling him to shut the fuck up. Like, can you just please shut the hell up?
That was a great,
nobody
yeah,
wants to hear
I got that video clip. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that was the one that really instigated it all, because it felt like the other NYC player was fine. Kind of just like after the second shove, like, all right, I'm just going to get out of here. Like whatever, yeah. You know, he's not getting up. He's just milking it. I'm just going to walk away. And yeah. It felt like it was pretty much harmless after that. Trainer did not like how close the player was. Shoved the player. Player went back a little bit. Second shove. Player went, all right, whatever, bleep this, I'm out. Then yeah. Castellanos comes in with the shove out of nowhere. And that's when the Union players saw that shove. And that's when the NYC reacting players ended up rushing. And everybody reacted to it. And that's the one where like it felt like it escalated the situation. But that's when everybody else was in the wrong, because rushing should not have done anything more than that. The fact that he got involved and went around for like a second and third time, like, no, at that point, hey, I'm the athletic trainer, I shouldn't be escalating this. I should be walking away. Like that's Castellanos to me was the one that really started all of it. It felt pretty harmless, the first interaction. But once that happened, it just was all hell broken loose. And it seemed like everybody was in the wrong after that.
Do you remember when they played up in New York earlier in the year and there was a similar thing? It was like behind the goal. I think Blake was holding on to the ball, or Castellanos came over and tried to like knock it out of his hands.
I know there was a small kerfuffle. There was some conflict in that game. Yeah.
But it's just like funny because these things are always start off as nothing. And baseball brawls are the same way too, where it's like, you know, somebody wants a piece, then they get all excited or whatever.
And Pivetta and Guerrero Jr. yesterday.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, I just think it's funny because I've been watching sports for 30 whatever years now. I've never seen a trainer or a doctor or like a physio get thrown out of a game before in my entire life. Somebody did share a story on the Crossing Broad Facebook page where they said in the 90s, there was a Sixers doctor who got like a technical called on him or something because he was like complaining about a call. But I've never heard of
that. That's happened before. Yeah, I'm sure. Somebody chirping too much.
In basketball and hockey, you're close to the action, but like the football, you know, football or soccer, you got to run 50 yards before you get anywhere close to.
Yeah. And it, soccer, and people don't like it, but like soccer's do run in like a different set of rules than like everybody else. And soccer. Like, it always seems like they're so close to a player that's injured. Like in football, if somebody was injured, especially if you had any kind of inkling that it was somewhat of a head injury, there'd be nobody within 50 yards. Like teams go to their sidelines or teams go to their huddles. They're nowhere near the player. Like soccer is the one sport that I can recall. If a player's on the ground, like players just circle around him and like over top of him.
They're just hovering.
Hovering around. Like, and I feel like there's no boundaries to that. And obviously an athletic trainer wants to do his job and make sure the player's okay. But, you know, I feel like that's where the conflict happens of like, man, the guy is a little bit close. So it does feel like the trainer is kind of at least closer in the action to get more involved, because in the NFL, nobody's around the guy. Nobody will be within 30, 40 yards of this guy.
No. And if they take him over, then there's the blue medical tent, which I want to fire into the sun. Nobody's around them for that. You can't see jack shit coming out of there either. So yeah, it just seems a little weird how everybody just kind of hovers it. The other thing, the final point I'll make on this is like, it's so stupid because Acevedo's like giving him the get up, you're fine, whatever thing. But the clock is still rolling, man. Yeah. The ref is adding that back on. Okay. So really the only legitimate gripe you can have if Carranza or anybody is faking it, and I don't want the Union to be fakers. I don't know if he was faking it or not, but I don't want them to do that. The only legitimate gripe you can have is like, hey, you're killing our momentum. Right. If like you know, Ole Miss flying down.
It was absolutely impatience. Not just from, I think, the clock, but
yeah. You know, like we see this in college football. Actually, sometimes you got to hurry up offense, spread, no huddle, bang, bang, bang. All of a sudden, dude from LSU has a cramp. You know, now your momentum is gone. Now the clock has stopped, so that doesn't matter. So you can't accuse him of milking anything, but he's trying to like blunt your momentum. You know, so that's really the only true gripe that you can have there, because
that's what it felt like to me.
There's no time wasting when the clock is continuous, you know? So, okay. So then the second thing that came up was the handball on Kai, which resulted in the equalizer. Then, and you and I were talking about this. This is my least fucking favorite thing on the planet. Like I've been saying on this podcast from day one, I just hate how these small bang bang things have such like sweeping huge changes in the course of a game. Okay. So you have a bang, bang thing where a ball hits a guy's hand as he's going to ground and he's like at an angle that's perpendicular to the goal. The XG on that cross is probably like 0.01. And yet the punishment for that is basically a free shot at goal. You know, so I've always felt like with those situations, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. It's not much of a crime in the first place anyway. So I've always said the way that I would redo that is that if you have like an inadvertent handball somewhere in the box, you give an indirect free kick, which are exciting plays in the first place. We don't get enough of them to begin with. And you know, if some guy pulls a Luis Suarez and he goes and bats the ball out of the, keeps it from going into the goal from point blank range, you red card that guy and you give the penalty anyway. But I just don't think that these cheap penalties really benefit anybody. And that's how I would start the conversation before I even get into what the fuck is a handball and what's not.
Exactly. Cause it's the language of it. That's all weird, but yeah, it would be, you know, trying to figure out what to do in that situation first, because they were in a spot like you pretty much just could have given them a corner kick, to be honest with you. They were pretty much almost behind the net at that point. And that's why the NYC player was desperate and just trying to kind of cross it in because he was in a horrible position. And Kai Wagner knew that. So he went down, I think, made the right play. It's just a thing of a circumstance of what else do you want him to do? Like, do you want him like maybe to slide with like his arms across his chest or something like that? Like, how do you play that? Because it felt like to me, his arm was trying to tuck his arm in, but obviously, you know, it's going to extend out a little bit and that's when it hit his hand.
So well, that's the point that I was trying to make.
Done differently.
That's the point I was trying to make to you at the end of the show the other night, because I think like, I don't like the idea like natural position, because natural is arbitrary in sport. Okay. Reggie Miller used to shoot like this. Right. I'm making like a weird motion with my hands that people can't see, but like he was a great shooter. Nobody said that like his position with his hands was unnatural? No, because that's how he shot. Sean Marion was the same way. It's like how I'm saying, you know, it's like how people want to say, well, the arm is in like an unnatural spot or like you're making an unnatural motion or whatever with it. But I was saying to you, like, how many people have you ever seen run or slide without moving their arms or with their arms at their side? Or like your arms are always going to be out and up. Yep. You know, when you jump for a header or whatever, you generate momentum with your arms too. And you pull your arms down as you arch your head forward. So sometimes like an arm is dangling or whatever, you know? And so I just don't, and in the case of Kai too, we were laughing about it on the post game show. Cause I'm like, this is not like the ice luge at the Winter Olympics, you know, where he's like sliding on his back with his like arms pinned to his side for like aerodynamics here. It's like in the process of running and then going over that, there has to be a time for him to pull his arm in, and he's making that motion down to his body. I just don't like any of that at all, because who defines what's natural and what's not? You know?
Yeah. And again, it's the language of it, but you know, I always have to feel like there's gotta be intent on it. You know, maybe he does like put his arm up a little bit. It always feels like that handball rule is for like when a guy maybe is trying to like deflect something. It's almost like the kickball in NBA. Obviously there's lower stakes on that, but it's like the intent of like, all right, it kind of hit his leg, you know, let's kind of move it or you know, restart the play, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. Something like that should be. Cause even a kickball could be, if you throw it at the guy's foot or whatever, that can still be a kickball and you're throwing it in. That's what it feels like it should be. But like, if there's intent, if the guy like puts his arm out, and I hate to say even in an unnatural way, but like flings his arm out just to like put it in front of the ball or something. Yes, there's some intent there, but when it comes to sliding, I don't know how you can say that's like a natural, unnatural position. I don't know. Like, just guys slide differently. And you know, I, I would slide probably different than the next guy. And like, if he's flailing his arms up, yeah, maybe that's a little bit excessive. But what Kai Wagner did was completely natural. To
no, if you're point blank, if it's point blank, you're like a foot away from the guy and it's ball to hand, then no problem. If you're standing, you know, 10 yards away and somebody takes a shot and you're trying and you're like trying to lean a shoulder or a chest into it and you like chicken wing it or something, like, then I get it, because there's a distance between there where you kind of have time to react. But like, these close contact bang bang kind of things are not like that. That's so, not why it was put. It was not, we didn't put these rules in place for shit like that to be punished, you know?
So there's two ways I think to go about this. Then would you want to change the language of the rule, or would you just want to change the severity of it because it's too much of a judgment call?
Man, I think if you just change the punishment that stems from it, then you would mitigate the problem. You know, I think there's a couple ways to cut out the problem. I think language is always fuzzy anyway and always arbitrary, right? Because you change the language to something else and then people will find a problem with that language, you know? So I would just like the punishment to be less severe, even if you kept like the handball language in the way it is, but you just made it so it's not an automatic penalty, then that would be fine for me. I just think there's too many games, not just in MLS, but in world soccer, they're just decided by bullshit penalties, you know, and penalties shouldn't be decided. Legit penalties too should not be as important as they are. I mean, look at all the goals that Ronaldo scores off of penalties, you know, and you got to make the disclaimer, okay, that this many were from the spots. I just want penalties in general to be not as big a part of the game.
Yeah. As well, they it's, are it's, now. Cause yeah, it's like in the NBA, you get a couple of free throws, but it's not like, you know, changing the game entirely. It's giving him a couple of points. It's was it a tacky call? Sure, but a team didn't win because of those two free throws. You know, it's the penalty changes the entire game. And it did for the Union. I mean, that could have ended up horribly for them, where they get another draw instead of the 3 points on something that wasn't really their fault, or they were any at fault in that goal. No, like, that should have been an easier win for the Union.
Yeah, and like, I like hockey. Here's an example. Like, okay, you have a guy who goes to the penalty box, but you still have a chance to kill the penalty, you know? But you give a penalty shot if he yanks down a guy who's
you're obviously giving him a clear advantage to score.
So in like these other sports, like the punishment fits the crime, where soccer, we go from like A to Z in like 2 seconds for some dumb reason.
Right.
The final point I want to make about that is what I was saying, just a repeat of the thing from the other night. But you know, a lot of times you see these like defenders now, because they're so afraid they're gonna get a fucking handball called on them, that they go up and they defend with their hands behind their back. And it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. No coach is ever gonna teach, or should have to teach, a kid to defend with his hands behind his back, you know, like cut off two of your appendages and just try to like contain a guy or block a guy, because it's just not like, what are we doing if that's what it is, you know? Like, your proper technique, you got your hands up for to your side for balance, you know, you're angling a guy, you know, you're using your feet the right way, and you're trying to read and react. You know, nobody should ever have to teach a 10-year-old kid, hey, you don't want to get a penalty here, so stand here with your hands behind
your back. It's almost like, hey, anytime you're in the box, make sure hands go, you know, put them in your pockets, put them on your sides. Like,
it shouldn't be like that. That's not beneficial to like anybody. You know, I already kind of have problems. I understand the concussion thing, where you don't want little kids heading the ball until they like, because you want to cut down on head injuries, and you know, CTE is a thing and whatnot. But at the same time, part of me, my other like, you know, devil's advocate side to that argument is, hey, if we teach these kids how to head the ball properly, then you know, they're not going to injure themselves. And how do we teach them to head the ball properly if we cut it out of the game entirely? So it's kind of similar to that. But the last point that I wanted to make from that game, there was another penalty shout at the end, you know, and it was like, actually, you know, in the Chicago game, there was a penalty shout too. Actually, let me do that real quick, because I forgot about that in the Chicago game. I didn't think that was a penalty on Corey Burke, just because I didn't have an angle. I mean, I didn't see an angle. Maybe VAR looked, maybe the ref looked at it upstairs and he had a different angle that we didn't have on TV. And maybe he was like, okay, maybe Corey was already going to ground, or there wasn't any contact on the leg, but it looked like Bornstein definitely did not get ball.
Right.
I just think from the front angle, it was hard to see if he got his leg too.
So the only thing I'll say to that is that it at least should have gone to VAR. It should have. It was too big of a play, too important of a play, too close. And it, like, that's what you're saying. Like, it should have not been a penalty, which I can't say it should or shouldn't have been, but it was close. And it was a call that could have changed the game, and a call that maybe should have been made. You have to go to VAR on that.
Or at least just let us.
Why is VAR there if you're not going to use it on a play?
Yeah. I mean, I get that. Yeah. And that's.
They used it on the second handball, potentially second handball in the Union, when it wasn't even close. Or I don't think they actually. Did they go to VAR on that one? Did they at least stop the action? I remember they stopped the action and were like thinking about maybe going.
I think the ref was waiting. Like he had his hand at ear, like he was waiting for something.
Of that happened. Like it just went on.
That's another good example though, because the ball was so close. I think it was Harriel and Castellanos weren't even facing away from goal and like jostling for position. So their hands is up because they're trying to shoulder and like elbow and leverage. And like, so of course your arm is going to be up. That's a natural thing too, as you jockey for position next to a guy. And so if your like finger touches the ball, as you guys are both like trying to get to it, that's not a dubious infraction. You know, it's like two guys are banging into each other and one of them happened to touch the ball. It doesn't like change.
That's when you know it's a problem where I can't even believe that was zoomed in on, discussed, play was stopped to be like, do we need to look at this? That was such a bang, bang play that was harmless. And all of a sudden it almost turned into a win for NYCFC because of that.
Yeah, and this is the thing. How much time in this podcast did we spend? And maybe it's different if we talk about Chicago differently or like take it in another direction if we want to. But the biggest takeaways, the biggest talking points from the New York game were, number one, the trainer being ejected, VAR penalty call number one and VAR penalty call number two. So you come out of it and that's all we're talking about, because that they have such significant bearing in a 90-minute game. A thing that they takes a half a second has such a significant bearing in a 95-minute game that it just kind of dominates and lords over other things that are like worth talking about. And it's like, I know we can talk about whatever the hell we want to, but those are the big like takeaways. So I just want to see a change where it's not like penalties, cheap penalties and bullshit like that aren't like totally like dominating the game, and that's all we ever talk about. Was that a penalty?
And always the problem with that is it's not like MLS after the season could be like, all right, let's discuss our rules. It's such a soccer's a global sport, and everybody wants to be kind of uniform. Obviously, it's games are played a little bit different in each, and not played different. It's more the style. Referees are different. I know CONCACAF is always kind of talked about in that way, but there's still this kind of uniform rules across the board, and so it feels like. To change anything, and soccer fans always feel like they're reluctant to change anything, but it's like the NFL can go change pass interference in one off season. I think they even change it during the season, like said to stop calling it because they can. It's their league. It's 32 teams and 32 owners, and they make it happen. When soccer, it just feels like it's such a big deal to change anything in that sport.
Yeah, because FIFA is involved, and you got to get Europe on board. And if we try doing something different over here, then Europe is like, oh, look at the Yanks trying to do some shit again. So you're like,
is kind of at the mercy of that because now they're playing American soccer, not how we play it here.
It's funny how they show like the video when Jesse Marsh went to Leeds of him doing like an old school MLS run up shootout, back in like 1997 or something. Like, what is this shit? But like it was different at the time. It was harmless, but you got to have like the rest of the world on board, which is not an easy thing to do. I mean, soccer is such an old school game. I mean, there's a lot of there's dudes in England who would be like, why are we even tallying assists? And I'm like, well,
probably
you can
probably
you can up you're not change the game completely. You can update it a little bit. And that's just how I've always felt about it. All right, we can wrap it up on one more here. I'll just give you the final thought, man. They got Columbus coming up on Sunday, then you got DC after that. And like, I don't know, what's your confidence level that they're gonna, figure it out here and start scoring some goals?
Yeah, I think what happened differently last year and why this seems, I guess, more urgent this year. I have to say urgent because they're in the first seed. But last year they came out so slow. They were in CONCACAF and they were doing somewhat successful there and ended up facing Club America. But they started off really slow and it was, all right, they had a lot of ground to make up, but we believed they can do it and they did. Yeah. But they started off strong this year. So to all of a sudden like revert back to, a lot of the old habits and some of the problems that we thought they had last year, it was kind of alarming. And okay, this Union team was good. They're still first place in the East and all that, but why are they reverting back to some of these things? Shouldn't they be getting better? There's no CONCACAF. There's no, anything other than that. But still, it's just, I think the Union are still finding their way. They still have a new player in Michael Uwa that needs to figure things out with Gostag and Carranza. He hasn't played a lot with them. So I still think there is, and even July last year, I remember, wasn't good. It was August and then September where they really made a run. And I kind of think it's setting up for that. Like, I think we are setting up for everything to kind of fit in place for the Union once, I think July comes around, but like once we get into August and September and then the playoffs, know, I think that's when you start seeing this Union team in a way that we were expecting earlier this season, and even these parts of it. So I'm not saying like last night's game, that was a bad loss. It was a bad loss, but it's going to happen throughout the season. Yeah. But the Union, my confidence level in them of, you know, getting back on track and looking better, come around to, you know, the important months of the season, I still think they are absolutely capable of that. They are, I still think the best team in the East, if not the best one of, for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think what I would just like to see is Jim, like, be able to influence this a little bit, you know, be it like a tactical just shift, or maybe, you know, trying to get a little bit more out of like a McGlynn or like a Sullivan or a Paxton Aaronson.
Well, that needs to happen. That hasn't happened yet. That absolutely needs to happen.
Yeah, like, how did
maybe this U-20 stuff is the one that's the catalyst for it, but it needs to.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, we talk about how, you know, I think, you know, when Jim turned the corner a couple of years ago, Ernst came in, got him some better players, of course, you know, but they had a defined system. But then he was able to show some tactical flex, go back out to the 4-2-3-1. He had Elsino be able to come in and show you a different look. And now I think probably the biggest concern for the Union right now is that there's no plan B, you know. So I think it's on Jim to say, hey, how do I show something different here? How can I, like, you know, kind of break these guys out of a mold here? Because, you know, otherwise you just get into like a square peg round hole situation where you're just waiting for players to step it up, you know, and so you try to like make that unstuck by yourself. And I'd like to see him, like, you know, I don't know what the answer is, but I'd like to see him kind of put his imprint on it and kind of like get like maneuver that a little bit and like kind of push these guys in a better direction, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, it feels like they have the depth to do it. Obviously it's thin now, but look at all the, it's thin because of look at all the U-20 guys that are in CONCACAF right now and successful. Sullivan and Paxton Aaronson and McGlynn all doing extremely well. So those guys have talent. And that sort of happened again a little bit later on last year. That happened more in July and August, where you're starting to see Aaronson come in and score some goals, and McGlynn, even in the playoffs. But those guys, that eventually has to happen. Like, if they can't, because they were already supposed to take a next step forward, and I think they end up doing that. But if that doesn't happen, then I think this Union team is in a little bit of trouble. But that's the thing. I expect not only their top strikers to get better, or, you know, their initial starting 11, especially Carranza and Uwa, but Aaronson's probably going to be more impactful. McGlynn's definitely going to be more impactful. Even the fact that they were able to find early on the fact that Harriel and Mbizo are so good, and you can interchange those pieces. Like, it's good, but eventually, you're right, that has to get going more than anything. Some of those guys are at the bench.
John Jansen from Fox Sports The Gambler, listened to him and I on the post-game show. I'm on every other show. Joe Tanzi's on everyone. Sean will be doing some of them too. At Twitter, JJansen34. And when's your regular shift? You still doing like a second, like a night side?
I'm up to six now. So I'm 6 to 9 most days. Show ends at 9 every day, but 6 to 9 or 7 to 9 on most days, depending on programming.
Cool. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. That was fun. We'll do it again. And go Union.